Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Legacy Leaders Radio.
Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Perry here in Legacy Leader Radio here in Midtown Atlanta, coming at you live today here in the beautiful, beautiful Midtown Atlanta. It's a wonderful day outside. We've got some great guest today from Street Grace. And on the phone with us today is Cheryl. Cheryl, say hello real quick for me, will you?
Hello.
Hey, Cheryl, it's good to have you on the radio. And ladies and gentlemen, you know I cannot continue the show or do this show without my wonderful friend and sidekick and producer who makes it all happen, beautiful Mike. Mike, say hello to the gang, please.
Hey, I don't know how I feel about a guy calling me beautiful, but you know what? I'll take it, Jack. I'll take it. Compliment's
okay,
a compliment.
Good, good.
But it's always good being here with you, man.
Good,
it's great.
Thanks. Appreciate it. And also in the studio today is Krista. Krista, say hello. Why are you here today?
Hello. Well, Michael is going to be out on some conventions,
remote
weddings.
Broadcast. Yeah, I got busy.
Yes,
May.
Congratulations. So I'm just sitting back and learning his studio, and I'm going to chime in a little bit. It's a beautiful day outside. Thanks for having me in the studio today.
Great. Thanks, Krista. It's wonderful to have you here. Ladies and gentlemen, before we get started today, I would like to invite you all to join in the show if we can do it virtually and live. If you'd like to join us at #LegacyLeaders, #LegacyLeaders, if you want to tweet on any of the issues or topics or subjects we're going to be talking about today. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk with Cheryl DeLuca Johnson today from Street Grace, and this is probably going to be one of our most sensitive, maybe self-informing, aha moment shows that we could probably produce since the legacy in the beginning of Legacy to Radio. I do not give the subject enough credit, and so I'm going to introduce Cheryl again and let Cheryl talk about who she is, what Street Grace is, and we're going to do a deep dive into how we and our society in Atlanta, in and around the world, can support, love, and embrace Street Grace. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Cheryl DeLuca Johnson. Welcome again, Cheryl.
Thank you so much, Jack. And I, as I told you off air before we started this show, is it's so important that people learn about this. And like you, a lot of people don't want to hear about it. It's a very difficult subject, but if we don't talk about it, we can't change it. And the good news is, hopefully by the end of this, we'll talk about ways that people can get involved and be part of the change.
Okay.
So I am CEO and president of Street Grace. Street Grace is a faith-based organization that is dedicated to ending DMST. DMST is an acronym that stands for Domestic Minor Sex Trafficking. Mm-hmm. And it means exactly what it says. Domestic meaning that these are our children. I think when we think of sex trafficking, a lot of times we look and think about Cambodia and Thailand and places overseas. But the truth is it's happening here, and it's happened here for a long time, and we'll get into some of that later.
Mm-hmm.
Minor. We're talking about children under the age of 18. Sex, if I have to explain that, that's a whole other show.
Yes.
And then trafficking.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of misconceptions around the word trafficking. I think because we, in our normal conversations, we picture trafficking as the moving of an individual from one place to the other. And that's not necessarily, necessary in this particular thing for it to be labeled trafficking. In this instance, trafficking means that somebody is being sold for something of value. And that thing of value doesn't necessarily wind up being money. Sometimes it is drugs. Sometimes it's a place to stay. Sometimes even food. So domestic minor sex trafficking, it has gotten some exposure in the news lately, but this is not a new topic. Mm-hmm. I have a book on my desk that was published in 1910 that says Stop the Trafficking of Our Girls. What has happened is I think we as a society have developed to the point where we can talk about it and we can make it part of a social justice change. So mm-hmm. Street Grace was developed from a primary group of churches. We're a faith-based organization. And the way that came about is in the year 2000 in Atlanta, a judge, Nina Hickson, wrote into the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on the editorial page and mm-hmm. said, what are we doing here? I have just presided over my 1,000th case of child prostitution.
Ooh.
These are victims. They're
wow.
not criminals.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? That particular article caught the attention of the then mayor, Shirley Franklin,
mm-hmm.
and she looked into it. She said, is this going on in my city? And if it is, what can I do about it? So she funded a study. The study
okay.
was called Hidden in Plain View. I think the study was completed in 2005, and parts of it were published in the AJC in the year 2006. And what this study was it was a mapping of the city of Atlanta and areas where this was occurring. And they named five areas. And one of them was at the corner of Piedmont and Farr, which if you're familiar with that area, that's a more affluent area.
Yeah.
Another corner that was identified was the corner of North Avenue and Peachtree, where
North
the Bank of America building is.
North Avenue and Peachtree. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
And,
okay.
And so right across from the Bank of America building is a church, North Avenue Presbyterian Church. And that church is a historic church in the city of Atlanta. It's very involved. It has a homeless program. It has all of this going on. And what happened is that morning, the pastor of that church, Dr. Scott Weimer, read the paper. And he said he was shocked. He said, not only is it happening in our city, which is terrifying and sad,
yeah.
but it's happening on the steps of my church. And so he got in touch with the mayor, and they had these faith-based roundtables. And from them came a group of churches together that said, what can we do that won't only create activity for activity's sake, but can actually move the pendulum of social justice to change this issue for our children in Georgia? And that was the birth of Street Grace. We actually were formally incorporated in 2009, and so we're 5 years old. And
okay.
what we do is we lead people on a comprehensive path to ending it. And so the first step in that path is awareness. And that's why today is so important. And I hope we get lots of questions. And I hope people,
mm-hmm.
even if they're shocked, they continue listening.
Yes.
Because if you're not aware of the issue, nothing can change. The second part of that pathway is empowerment. So I'm going to, you know, if we make you aware and we don't give you any way to do something about it, you simply leave frustrated and the issue doesn't change. So awareness, empowerment, and then we expect you to engage in some way. From that empowerment stage, we're going to tell you ways that you can engage in your community, in your cities, teachers in their schools, that you can do something that will actually change the outcome for children.
Okay.
And from that, okay, I'm sorry, social change is the fourth step. Fifth step is ending DMST. So that's what we do.
Okay. I'm blown away by that. So if I could just dive into this and just start this conversation, where does Atlanta fit in worldwide as far as DMST or any type of other type of trafficking that takes place? How does Atlanta fit into the stats?
Well, Atlanta was recognized in an FBI report of 14 cities several years ago. And people have said Atlanta's number one.
Wow.
That, yeah, well, but I'm gonna take that back a little bit.
Okay,
good. The thing is, we were recognized as one of 14 cities by the FBI. The reason that people started saying we were number one is because the list that they gave out was in alphabetical order, so
okay.
they weren't actually ranked. But
yeah.
to be one of the first cities included in a study like that tells you that there's a lot of activity here in Atlanta. In the studies that have been done over the years through the Shapiro Group, and they were originally initiated through Youth Spark and that sort of thing. Estimated that there were between 200 and 400 girls that would be sold each month in the state of Georgia. And then there was a report that came out, March 12th, that it was a study of eight cities, so it's not inclusive of the whole United States, but of eight cities, and Georgia ranked number one for dollars in underground sex trade, $290, I think, million dollars a year.
Okay, let me just back. Okay, good. Let me just back that up. So I've got, as I'm writing here, and I think Mike is as well, is that 200 to 400 girls in the state of Georgia, and you said eight cities. those eight cities in Georgia or eight cities?
Oh, no, they were like Miami and I don't
know. So around the United States?
Around the United States. Atlanta was the one that was studied in Georgia.
I got you. Okay, so.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, no, not a problem. I want to make sure we're clear on this. So in the United States, even though the list was alphabetical, where does Atlanta rank?
And you know what? I don't know.
Okay.
We know
it
that
almost
Atlanta
doesn't matter,
is
though,
generally
right?
recognized because one of the things that's happened is studies aren't being done in every city in the United States.
Okay.
And that the studies are done differently. We're looking at national research going forward. But right now we can't say. What we can say is that it's 200 to 400 girls too many.
Yes.
And if that doesn't bother you, if the ranking is more important, then we're probably, don't have much else we can say to change your mind anyway. So
the fact that, to me, what gets me is the fact that this type of trafficking takes place because nobody has the right to take away the happiness of a child. Nobody has the right to take away the spirit and the growth of a child in any way.
I mean, here's where I'm kind of like, what?
No.
How does this even happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what does a profile look like? What's the map on this, please, Cheryl? Talk to us.
Well, there were several questions in that, so I'll start answering. If I don't answer all of them, then you can ask me again.
Yeah, we'll get you.
Yeah, I was going to say,
You've got us excited about this subject. Yeah.
Well, the thing is to go back to the idea that this is not new, that this has been happening for a very, very long time, that people with money tend to purchase those without, and that the most vulnerable tend to be children. And what we say is, people ask, well, which children are involved in this? And I kind of liken it to heart disease. Who can get heart disease? Anybody with a heart. This is true. And the same thing is true with children. But there are certain factors that increase the likelihood that you'll get heart disease. We know that obesity, sugar, all those sort of things will increase it. Well, the same thing is true for these children. Even though every single child is vulnerable, there are certain things that make them more vulnerable. And one of the overarching common denominators globally is poverty. And so we know that poverty, increases the likelihood that they will not complete high school. And not completing high school makes them more vulnerable to situations where they can be exploited. One of the things in the United States that we've known for a long period of time is that our foster care system is broken. Having no stable family or having abuse certainly makes you more vulnerable to this. And, as somebody who comes from faith and a faith-based organization, I think that, we're to blame for how that's happening. We've sat back and said, let the government take care of this, blame the government system, and not intervened. So one of the things that we have talked about is feeding a vulnerable child. We have heard anecdotally from those people who restore these children that sometimes these children are lured in at the price of a Happy Meal. You poor thing.
Oh, man.
What is going on? You know what? You are hungry, and you were hungry yesterday.
Yeah.
You know what? If you come with me, I love you so much, I'm going to feed you every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is if you've ever really been hungry, then that's enough. And these children believe that this person loves them. A lot of times, even after we have, and I'm using air quotes that you can't see here, that even after these children have been rescued, they don't feel rescued. Because there's a person who fed them every day, and even though that they were sold for this, that's their boyfriend, and they were just helping them out. So it's...
If I can get this profile right... So they identify the person, touch their heart, feed them a meal.
Well, they make them dependent,
and
right?
and they become very codependent on that person, but the actual love of that human being, that person, is not there.
Oh no! But a lot of these girls believe it is, and that's what makes it difficult, and that's why educating the general public when they're in a jury pool and they see this child who's not acting like a victim, and they see this perpetrator where they understand some of the dynamics that are going on. So, any child is vulnerable. Those that are already vulnerable for a multitude of reasons are, of course, more vulnerable for this.
Sure, sure. Atlanta Hartsfield International Airport, number one airport, busiest airport in the world. Does that play a factor into our into DMST?
It does, but not as big a factor as people want to believe it does.
Okay.
When there was a demand study that was done in 2010, it was commissioned by YouthSpark and done by the Shapiro Group. And what it found is that of the men calling in to knowingly or unknowingly purchase a child, and I'll explain why we say that way, 42% of the phone calls came from north of the perimeter.
Wow.
That's
where the money is.
Yeah, you're picturing all those communities, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was 24 or 26% came from south of the perimeter.
How did they? Okay, all right. Now
only 9% came from the airport area.
Interesting. Well, it's like you said, it's happening on the busiest street corners in Atlanta.
Well,
you know,
and it's actually
our noses.
It is, and you look at those areas, and they're the more affluent areas. The other thing that has happened over the past 10, 14 years is with the increased capabilities of the Internet and the anonymity that it gives and the organization that it offers, Internet transactions have gone way up to like 75-80%. So it's not like you used to see where women and girls and those sort of things are walking actual street corners now.
Right.
Now those transactions are done behind the scenes, and it allows anonymity for those who are buying, that feeling of security that, you know, I don't have to drive my car down this known corner. I can make the transaction, you know, I can find the transaction online, make a phone call, and they will actually bring the girls to me. And I had I'm not going to call it a privilege, I had the opportunity to hear some of the phone calls of these men calling in.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
And the most disturbing part about it is, like, they're ordering a pizza. Oh, you have a 15-year-old biracial, and do you have anything younger than that? No?
No.
All right, well, you know what? We're slow today, so can you drop them off between 2 and 5, and I'll call you if I need somebody tomorrow.
Gosh. That's
said it's
way,
horrible.
It's way too casual.
We've done. We have, because if you look at arrests, and that's why I want to get to the solution.
Sure.
We have not been penalizing until in the past 6 months is the first time that we have convicted or indicted somebody who purchased the child. Those purchasers have gone unpunished for a long period of time.
Why do they
keep doing it?
Why do you think that is? Why is it just now, why are people just now taking action or more action than in the past?
I think because of what I want to believe is because we're raising appropriate awareness in the right places and saying we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because here's the thing is when we talk to groups, one of the things that we recognize happens, especially if I, as a woman, am talking to a group and there's men in the group, those men in the group, even if they've done nothing wrong, feel chastised because it's there. You know, most of these transactions are 95% male.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have worked really hard to do is empower them. You know, we say there may be 7,000, this is what came from that report, 7,200 men a month who knowingly or unknowingly purchase a child in Georgia. We know there are 10 times that many who want to stand on the other side. We've got a place for you to stand now.
Okay,
we've
hold
got
on.
Something for you to do.
Okay, so here's what I'm getting. The study has shown that an average, and you say monthly, 7,200 phone calls?
Yeah, 7,200 men will knowingly or unknowingly purchase a child. And I know it, and that's, and I'm, we only used primary resources for the statistics. We state every bit of research comes under fire, and somebody said, well, can you count these? Here's the thing, is from that study, it was extrapolated that 7,200 men will purchase knowingly or unknowingly a child in Georgia each month. And the bulk of those are north and south of the perimeter.
So you keep saying knowingly or unknowingly.
That's what I'm interested in.
Well, let me tell you.
Explain the loophole there.
Tell me how that works.
See, I was hoping that would happen. You are very good and inquisitive folks. So
ignorant more than anything.
Yeah, more clueless at times than anything else. Trust me.
Hey, that works for me too. Yeah, I can work with clueless. Yeah. I am clueless at times. So what that means is when this was set up, They used ads in places like Backpage and Craigslist that we knew from speaking to, you know, that not we, but I consider myself part of this group. We supplied volunteers and worked closely with them, but that the researchers knew from GBI, police sources, those sort of things, the type of ads that were for children.
Okay.
You know, they used words like fresh candy, new, barely legal, all of those sort of things.
Yeah.
So they put those in to these ads for these men to call into.
Okay.
And so when we say knowingly or unknowingly, we couldn't verify on every phone. It wasn't verified on every phone call that these men knew they were purchasing a child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was a belief that they knew that there was the possibility that that was happening. But partway through the study, one of the things that the researchers did is they kind of did another study at the end. When they realized how many people were calling in for these ads, what they started doing is they said they added three questions or statements at the end of the phone call. And what they did is they would escalate the knowledge that this was a child. Well, yeah, I think they're 18. The second one being, well, you know, they say they're 18. They don't really look 18. To the third statement being, look, this one's under 18, you know. And what they found, good news, bad news, is approximately 50% of those who went through those three questions dropped off the phone call. The problem is approximately 50% stayed. But what we learned from that and what we're basing some things on until we get some longer studies is if we can take away that deniability, if we say we're not going to take your excuses anymore that you didn't know it was a child, we're going to make it really clear through public service announcements like the one we're partnered with the Attorney General's office on Georgia's not buying it. Mm-hmm. If we take those away, can we reduce demand by 50%? Because that would be a very good goal. So we're working on
that idea
right
considering.
Now. And the fact is that when we can have prosecution saying, your excuses don't work anymore, your deniability has been taken away, that we can reduce demand. And that's the only way, because this is a business, it's the only way that supply is reduced is when you reduce demand.
So, Cheryl, if I can ask you this question.
No.
Tell me, I love this woman. Okay. Cheryl, how do you work with and what type of relationship do you have with law enforcement agencies on your cause right now?
We love law enforcement. Well, I'll tell you who we're partnered with right now and who I sit with. Vernon Keenan with the GBI. And one of his agents, Brian Johnston, actually works on the governor's office task force with me. So they're there every month. He's part of management for that task force. I'm part of management group for that particular task force. We work with a group called A Future, Not a Past on Youth Spark, and they help train police officers. So we always offer their training when we go into cities. One of the things we're looking at is empowering cities to be champions for safe children in the state of Georgia. So we have a good working relationship with law enforcement. We're actually one of the things that has happened because of these conversations with law enforcement and saying, what can we do, you know, to help make your job easier, is it came out that, you know, if law enforcement has a situation with a child, one of the problems that they run into is there's no place to put that child so they can go after the bad guys who did this.
Okay.
That there's somebody who has to sit with that child until that child is, you know, a de facto or whoever the appropriate guardian or worker is can come get the child. Well, Georgia Cares, which is a statewide response, which is phenomenal that Georgia has that. We have 1-800 number that that people can call in if they suspect somebody is being trafficked, a child is being trafficked. But they're working on building an assessment center where police officers, when they encounter this in the state of Georgia, will have a place that they can drop the child immediately, or a caseworker will get that child so that they can go after the perpetrators. So I'd say we are part of several public-private partnerships. We're partnered with the Department of Education. And one of the things we found out through Georgia Cares is 91% of the over 400 children who have been identified as victims in the state of Georgia over the past few years through that 800 number are still enrolled in school. And our and so Street Grace has developed, it's free to the teachers. If you would like to sponsor the training of a teacher for $5 each, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, but I just did.
Yes, you're certainly allowed.
Yes, of course you
then
can. Of course.
What we're offering to all the teachers in the state of Georgia is training so that they can recognize, report, and support those children
who
may become victims.
That's so cool. Great.
Can we attend?
Yes.
Yeah.
And actually,
anybody
it's web-based, and it carries one PLU for teachers, so it's free. But we do trainings and awareness and everything all over the state of Georgia. We're actually... We actually are contracted with the Governor's Office for Children and Families to provide training to their grantees on this topic. So that is our strong suit, is educating adults on this topic so that they can be the protectors of children like we're supposed to.
Go ahead, Mike.
I have a kind of a two-part question. What's the attitude of the women or the girls, I guess, that that you pull off the street? And part two of that question is what are you doing to kind of pre-educate young girls to not fall into this trap?
Well, the first part of the question, and we don't do restoration. We partner with groups like Wellspring Living that do restoration, is they don't always recognize their victims. And I'm going to go back to, like, domestic violence 50 years ago, where, you know, we as a society have, you know, at that point in time, put the burden on the person being beaten.
Yeah.
Well, if you hadn't talked back to him, well, you know that's a trigger for him.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
If you said this, you know, and I find we're doing the same thing with these girls.
Yeah, I like to, first of all, before you continue, and I normally don't like to jump in the middle of a conversation like that, but I'd like to say that that comment you made, if you hadn't have done this, this would have happened to you. I'd like to categorically go online on live air and say, that's a bunch of crap. So I support you.
Interrupt me all the time for that kind of stuff, Jack.
I support you 100%.
You know what? I mean, all the time. And the thing is that I love when men say it's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, it's a bunch of crap.
Because I can say it's a bunch of crap. And, you know, some people will hear me, but men talking to men saying that's crap. We're not buying that stupid excuse anymore.
Yep.
Don't tell me that you don't understand how going to a strip club can promote DMST around that area.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that, you know, I did have somebody tell me, well, I'm getting off topic.
No, it's okay.
No,
you're okay. Trust me.
Okay, good.
You're fine.
But one of the things
is, let it roll.
I've done many of these radio shows, and you can't see me, but I'm a middle-aged white woman. And so,
No way.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And so here's the thing is, but I talk to people and I'd say, you know what? What we have to understand is that this is a societal zeitgeist, that there's this kind of feeling all around our society that has gotten more permissive and more permissive of things we should not have accepted.
Yeah.
The fact that Abercrombie and Fitch can come out with a padded bra bathing suit for 7-year-olds should tell us something.
What?
I'm sorry. Back that up again.
I wish I could say I was surprised.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could say too.
Okay.
But no. So anyway, so there was, and I'm not going to name names, but there was this radio station that I was talking to in another part of the country, and I was talking about how research supports that the more adult entertainment you have, which Atlanta, you know, Georgia has a lot of, that the higher the likelihood there is that domestic minor sex trafficking will occur.
Okay.
And, you know, they said, you know, and so we get through the interview, and the very last thing that they say to me is, well, you know, Cheryl, I agree with 99.9% of everything you've said. And I knew the part they were going to disagree with. He goes, but this is, you know, strip clubs, I don't see the problem with that. That's healthy, consenting adults working and going. And I said, well, first off, I'm a licensed professional counselor. Do you want to tell me that you believe, honestly, as a you know, healthy, functioning adult, that you believe 100% of those going in and working there are healthy and functioning? That's the first issue I have.
Yeah.
I said, but the thing is that as soon as you objectify anyone, you become more likely to objectify everyone.
Yeah.
And
especially effect,
that
right?
whole American idea that I've paid for it, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
I hope you feel icked.
Yeah.
You're supposed to.
Okay. Well, we got some icky going on here. Yeah, I got Cheryl, tell me about prosecution rate based upon what you're doing and what your organization is doing? How have you helped in the prosecution of, and I'm looking at your bio here, and you have the word victims, buyers, and Johns. So how does, yes. Tell me about the prosecution rate.
Well, and I would like to change. Here's one of the things. I'm going to go back to the term Johns. I don't use Johns anymore.
Okay.
We say perpetrators who buy. Because okay. The thing is that when we talk about women or girls who are involved in this, we have a lot of nasty names we use for them.
Yeah.
And then for the person who's buying the sex, we call them John.
Okay.
A nice, innocuous, anonymous sort of thing.
Right. Okay.
So, well, let me just go back to the history here. And in the year 2000, when that judge wrote into the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about this, the penalty for someone who sold a 12-year-old child for sex was $50 and a misdemeanor.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
I needed to pause there. Yes. In the year 2000, in the state of Georgia, that was the penalty.
Oh, my gosh. In the year 2000 for a 12-year-old?
To be sold?
To be sold.
So the quote-unquote pimp?
Yes.
Okay.
$50 and a misdemeanor. And generally, there wasn't anything that happened to the person who bought, because their defense would be, she told me she was older. Mm-hmm. And what other crimes do we blame the child for telling them? Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. But in the year 2011, and this was a monumental...
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm going to go back real quick. What was the penalty for the 12-year-old?
The reason the judge was writing in is because she had a 12-year-old in shackles going to juvenile detention.
So she was getting jail time.
Yeah.
The 12-year-old. The 12-year-old.
So backwards.
So that's what was happening. And sometimes the judges, you know, were saying, you know, at least we had him off the street for this period of time because we had no other solutions. Now, thankfully, we have some other options rather than juvenile detention. But that was it. So the child is going to juvenile detention. The pimp's paying the $50 because he made more than that off this child. And the person who bought it is walking away.
I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I wish it weren't true, but let me give you the good news.
Okay.
So
please.
When I first, yes. Oh, I thought you said something.
No, please.
We want to give some good news.
So let's get some good news in here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we know is that our laws should reflect the ethos of the society. Mm-hmm. And if those were, you know, and thankfully when people read that, they said this doesn't fit. So they changed part the law the next year to where it was a slightly larger penalty. But it was in the year 2011. House Bill 200 was passed, and it was passed with only one vote, negative vote, through the House and the Senate. And House Bill 211 raised the penalties for both those who buy and those who sell children for sex to up to $100,000 and up to life in prison. And since that law has gone into effect, there have been convictions for both buyers and recently buyers and those who sell under that law. And it's a trafficking law. So that's saying that we are beginning to stand up and say no. Mm-hmm. So we're beginning to have prosecutions. I know that one of the things that happens is a law passes, but it takes a period of time before, police officers, judges, lawyers, and everybody are kind of caught up on it and trained on how to use it. Well, that's beginning to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to see more and more convictions, but I'm very pleased that in the past 6 months we have had, I think three indictments of those who are buying. Because it's going to begin to send a message that, don't buy our children.
Okay.
So
tell me, Cheryl, have you the young girls, now we're saying girls, I'm going to assume there's been young males involved with this as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you had any follow-up with them after they've been rescued, and how they're doing, how are they thriving today?
Well, there's a woman, Mary Frances Boley, who founded Wellspring Living for Girls. And there are tremendous stories that come out of there. That's the one that's associated with the Governor's Office for Children and Families. You know, girls who are brought in, who are brought off, who originally aren't even sure that they're victims, who are graduating high school, going on to college, who are becoming a voice and an advocate for those who are still in this. And, probably the most powerful voice. So there are several survivors. And what's happened also is now that this topic has come up, there are adult survivors that have come out and said, I am a survivor, and now are taking places to stand and be advocates on a national and a local level, speaking to legislators, beginning to form restorative homes, offering counseling services and peer counseling to these girls. Corporations have the more understanding we mm-hmm. build, the better able we are to support them as they come out of this. Mm-hmm. So they're great success stories for some of these children that come out. The stories for those who do not come out, and I hesitate to say this because I'm looking for where that statistic is, but I can't find it.
Okay.
But that there's an average of like 7 to 10 years of life if you're not out of it.
What do you mean?
Clarify
yeah,
that?
Meaning that, that a lot of these children who, if they don't get out of it, will die within 7 to 10 years. And a lot of these, you know,
seven
in,
to
in
10
my
years,
heart breaks seven, for the young women too, because you find a 21-year-old, they probably were brought into this when they were still underage.
Okay, now, when you say 7 to 10 years, you're talking about their life expectancy in this
yes.
trade? Wow.
So what are some of the causes?
Good point.
Well, there are a multitude of
I'm sure
causes.
There are drugs
there,
involved.
There are obviously... There, you know, we do need to talk about drugs and that
yeah,
sort of thing
please.
In association with this, either as a way to keep them compliant or as a coping mechanism mm-hmm. for those people who are in it. Because what a horrible, horrible situation.
Sure.
And, you know, so coping mechanism. The other thing is that certainly the lifestyle itself of multitude of men.
Mm-hmm.
Diseases, the lifestyle includes beatings and, just all of those factors play into it. It's a violent, violent life. And so those are all the factors that play into it. Suicides, drugs, beatings, disease,
Cheryl,
all of those sort of
let
things.
Me ask you this. What should we be aware of? If I am out with my family out on the street, and what would the profile look like? It's something that would catch my eye where, that I would need to get involved or say something. Let's start with that first. And what would be the next steps if I was to see something like that or
okay.
I become aware of it?
Well, let me, so the first, there are several things to note, and I think one of the things to look for is, for instance, if there is an older male and he has several younger, you know, more than one younger, if they happen to be of a different ethnicity, so you have a male who is clearly older, he has two or three younger girls with them, but they may be of the same or maybe of different ethnicity. They're hanging out in a hotel parking lot or in the parking lot of a mall, something mm-hmm. like that, or outside of would be considered a tourist attraction. I know that sporting events tend to be places where this that are good
mm-hmm.
for business
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
this particular business
mm-hmm.
yeah so those would be things. I mean, the thing is that if you notice a girl who looks young and is provocatively dressed and is hanging around, again, those areas, there are things in that make sense after you have seen them.
Okay.
And I think here's what I'm doing is I'm going on our website because we have great resources that
yeah.
will actually, if you go to our website, it will give you a list of risk factors, things like that. And I'm looking for also Georgia Cares has a website, and Georgia Cares is the Georgia response. And you think I would have their number memorized,
yeah.
but
yeah.
as I mentioned, I'm older, so I don't always
have
that memorized. So, yeah.
Well, we also want to make sure that we don't misinterpret a situation either.
Well, you don't want to misinterpret it, and that's why there's the 800.
Yeah, you don't want to get Hugh Hefner called.
You don't have to prove it. Don't intervene. Gosh knows, don't intervene, because if somebody, don't be a hero.
Right.
If you see somebody, and even if it is clear as day that child, you know, is way too young to be dressed the way they are and hanging out with that particular man.
Yeah.
You still, the best thing for you to do is call the 800, the Georgia 800 number. Do not intervene. You make them you set up a dangerous situation for them and for yourself.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Don't do that.
So you mentioned that this epidemic has kind of evolved with the times, going more online, less street corners. What are some ways that, unfortunately, they're finding ways to dodge you guys and to stay a step ahead of you?
Oh, well, here's the thing. We're hundreds of years behind the game.
That's the way,
have been organizing and doing this for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. I do think that there are being better developed ways of tracking this through the internet and that sort of thing. But our laws haven't caught up to the internet.
Okay.
I mean, we're so far.
You're absolutely right.
But I know that we have a GBI task force that's completely dedicated to this, and that they have a whole cyber group, and that's what they look at. They look at these. They look at identifying. They're looking at facial recognition sort of stuff. So they're working really hard. I think we're behind also because, again, I keep going back to this, but what we're really trying to do is change the thinking of society. So up till now, this has not been a priority in society because we've always considered it affecting some, the good people have considered it somebody else's problem happening somewhere else. When we can bring the data to show it's happening in your community and some of your community leaders, meaning those, you know, who have affluence and influence, are involved on the wrong side of it, then it becomes our problem. You know, if we know that 42% of the phone calls came from north of the perimeter, we begin having to consider that we're sitting next to them in the church pew and we're in the grocery line with some of these people.
Yeah, it really brings it home.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, then we want to do something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Hey, that's my neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. And I live in Gwinnett County, and I know it was, I don't know how many years ago, but it was actually like a CEO from a firm who was finally, you know, indicted for having sex with a minor. And their thing was, well, she told me she was older. I mean, it was just crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Lawrence Taylor, that was his defense. She told me, and I went, really? So we're putting the burden of all of this on the child.
I really think that with the evolution of technology, too, it gives people the sense that they can make a difference globally because you can see it happening. You're more aware because you have that resource. Unfortunately, you know, the sex traffickers are using it to their advantage, but that's a way to stay one step ahead, too, on our side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's it. And that's what, like, I mean, having this opportunity, what you guys are doing today is allowing this topic to get out there to more people than I can reach on my own for sure. And that's what we need. We need people being willing to talk about this. And, you know, when they hired me 6 years ago, and I told, after turning it down three times, still here 6 years later, but I told them, I said, if you want somebody who's going to whisper about this in polite tones, because we don't talk about sex in public, certainly sex with children, you got the wrong person. It is time because the other side wants us to whisper. We should be screaming this from the mountaintops. And we should be very comfortable in talking about it and talking about that we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, look at, you know, pop stars, pop culture, sex sells. Why can't we talk about this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, you know what kills me? It's like, I don't know how many years ago it was, but that's exactly it, is that the rap song that won was like, it's hard out here on a pimp.
Yeah. And that's changing.
And it won.
It's ridiculous. That's changing, you know, girls, it puts their self-worth in that, you know. They hear, hey, you know, your booty looks good, then that's what makes them feel good, you know.
Campuses where I said, now, all of you who think it's cool to say, hey ho,
yeah, yeah,
stop. Because, you know, and I'm going to go back to another, you know, another civil rights movement is when African-American men with dignity were called boy. And the thing is that our language does matter. So we never say that there are child prostitutes because there aren't any. Right. There are children who have been prostituted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are no child prostitutes, indicating that they've made some kind of choice in this.
They never, yeah.
Cheryl, let me ask you a question. What other national organizations are behind you? Are you working with as well? I know you mentioned some here locally. Tell me about your national involvement around the world, around the world.
I just met with Shared Hope this past week, and they're the ones who give the grades nationally to all the states on their legislation around this particular issue. So there's Shared Hope International. We work with Polaris is one of the national organizations, and we certainly partner with them on some of their initiatives and that sort of thing. But one of the most exciting things, and I can announce it now, is that there's a researcher, Laura Lederer, and she was one of the first ones in Washington, D.C. to initiate and organize the TIP reports, which are trafficking in persons reports.
Yeah.
She has a 25-year history of working on trafficking research. She has just been granted the Bastions, it's going to be the Bastion Research Center in Washington, D.C., the opportunity to lead the first research center focused on trafficking in the United States, and I actually have the honor of sitting on their advisory board, and so we are actually going to have some of their projects and some of their research sort of things happening here in Georgia, and so that's phenomenal because it's the research and the data that's going to continue to drive this toward a positive end.
When you mentioned earlier about follow-up on some of these young ladies and boys, let me ask you this. What have you learned, and of your educational background, your counseling background, has been the impact of that lifestyle that they endured on their relationships with other people, their interaction with other people, say a marriage their social engagement with other people in their day-to-day activities. Do you have any read on that, any feedback?
Well, I'm going to give you a personal story.
Sure, please.
Because of this work, when I started this job 6 years ago, I was the mother of 4 children.
Okay.
2 biological and 2 adopted. I'm now the mother of 6 children.
and two
of them adopted out of foster care because of this issue. So I'm going to give just a snapshot. And this is 2 little girls who have some of the same risk factors. I mean, all the risk factors that would have, I believe, made them very vulnerable later on.
Okay.
And so I'm just going to talk about the effect at that point in their lives, at 9 and 10 when we adopted them. And then you can extrapolate outward. Years more of abuse, including intense sexual abuse.
Okay.
And because I think this is what's happening. And so these 2 little girls, we adopted them. They were 9 and 10. When we brought them into our home, we were their 7th home in 6 years. So that's one thing. And that is not unusual, and actually not a high number of transitions in foster care. So one of the things I noticed in my husband, I noticed when they were, you know, when we would go someplace, we'd go from here, we'd go to my mother's house, or we'd go to the beach on vacation, and they would like start from ground zero, breaking all the rules. Finally put it together that when they changed locations, the rules did change for them because they were a different family, you know, all of this. So there was an instance where I was registering for them for school, and they tore something out of a magazine, and that was one of the things we talked about, you know, And frankly, you know, I did that whole good mother thing. It's like, you know what? I am so done going over this. I have told you the rules are forever. Rules go with the family. Family's forever. I can't go over this. So when we get home, you're going straight to your room. I don't even want to talk to you anymore today. Burned out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get in the car, being good mom, right? And so we get in the car and we're driving and she says, mom. And for her, mom was, I mean, several people were mom, this adult female in the house. And she goes, can I ask one question? And I go, you know, my good mom mode. You can ask one question, but I'm telling you, when we get home, I don't want to hear your voice. I don't want to see you. Go to your room for a while. I need a break.
Yeah, yeah.
She goes, mom, can you tell me how long will forever be this time?
Ooh.
How old was she again?
She was 10.
Mom, how long will forever be,
this time? When I write my book, that's going to be the title. We are creating generations of children, hundreds of thousands of children, who have no concept of what forever means. And so I'm going to speak as a person of faith. How in the world would you ever convey any faith concepts? But how do you convey anything? The concept of marriage, if we talk about it being forever, what does that mean? Does that mean until I mess up? Or these little girls would check the mail, and I thought they were being helpful. They were making sure that the checks were coming, because when we were foster parents, they got checks for that first 6 months, so that they would know if the check came, then they could stay here a little bit longer.
Oh, isn't that sad?
I mean, we are creating this idea where there is no healthy understanding
stability
of partnership, love, belonging.
Stability and predictability within our lives.
Oh, none.
Yeah.
And so, and we're still working on that. We've had the girls now. It'll be 3 years, three and a half years in July. And they're still working on that. And they may work on it forever. But we're working to, you know, to give them at least an inkling of what it may be. So that is before they've been traumatized in the ways that these other girls have been traumatized.
Cheryl, let me ask you a question about hypocrisy here. Because when you're in the studio, when you're talking, I take notes and I try and counter.
You call me a hypocrite?
No.
Oh my goodness!
I'm going to absolutely not. I'm going to talk about hypocrisy among, and I'm going to hit a nerve here among men. Mm-hmm. And I will be more than happy to go to a strip club, but heaven forbid my daughter had better not ever step inside one of these places.
Absolutely.
And so I will pick up the telephone and call a 1-800 number for child sex, but heaven forbid my daughter had better never get involved in something like that. Tell me the hypocrisy involved with that.
Well,
I mean, do you see that? Find
that? Here's the thing is, we are uniquely, and I will, as a therapist, I can tell you men are even more adept at compartmentalizing things. Let me tell you some of the excuses, and this is why I'm so pleased with the partnership with the Attorney General, Sam Olens, here in the state of Georgia, on the Georgia's Not Buying It campaign, is that, you know, we listen to this, and I almost can't spit it out because it was just, I didn't even know where to start with this. It was like, well, you know what? But the thing is that me doing this and paying for this helps her out because she needs the money. And I want to go, then just give her the dang money.
Money,
You know? Don't act like you're a hero, but this
it's faulty logic.
And actually, from what I understand, that the person, you know, it is not uncommon for, you know, the men who are purchasing it to have daughters and that sort of thing. So all I can say is that we as a society have allowed that compartmentalization, and we need to take down those walls.
Okay.
We have allowed the thinking. We have allowed this crazy thinking that that everyone in a strip club is an adult who's consenting and healthy.
To where they're at.
Yeah. I mean, rational people, if they take just 5 seconds, would know that all three of those things can't be true.
Okay.
You know. So I think that's it. I think for one thing is that, it's sometimes, you know, we can rationalize what we want to do. And if nobody's standing on the other side to challenge it, we get to keep that rationalization.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's time for us to stand on the other side.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And in keeping with the kind of shock and awe theme of this show, what's your, usually we'd want your best, I want your worst story out of these things.
My worst.
The one that just makes you cringe, still gets you pissed off.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'll tell you my worst story, and it's not going to have to do with a particular victim.
Okay.
My worst story is, I will tell you this, and it was actually, I'm trying to couch and see if I can tell this, but there were several in line with this, but one of the things that was most frustrating to me is I had the naivete when I first started showing up at the Capitol that, and I will say it's changed tremendously, but that if I, you know, when I first went down there, we were fighting to have the children recognized as victims. I said, okay, well, this is logical, because if you can't consent to sex in the state of Georgia till you're 16, and you can't enter into a financial contract till you're 18, then the state of Georgia recognizes that the, you know, mental and emotional capabilities aren't there, then we can't be sending a 14-year-old right. having sex for money to juvenile detention. They're a victim.
Right.
And so I went down there to testify, and it truly was one of those where you sit on the ground and they sit in these seats above you. And this was 5 or 6 years ago. And so I went to testify because I had this, I was leading this organization. I'm a therapist. I worked in women's issues. And the thing kept coming up. They said, nope, some of these children are asking for it because they want an iPod or they want sort of this. And they want, and I said, you know, every
That's
kid
weak.
Wants an iPod.
That's weak.
You know, should they have to pay this price for it? And so one of the things that I said, you know, I gave in. And I said, yes, okay, because this is the battle we're still fighting in a lot of arenas. I said, okay, I give up. Okay, they have a choice. And I will liken it to the choice of somebody, you know, I'm sitting in the sidewalk cafe, and I look up, and somebody's jumping out of the sixth floor of a building. And, you know, I look at them, and I go, well, that is a dumb choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I said, they're going to hurt themselves, probably die. You know, and the thing is that me sitting there sipping my coffee on the sidewalk don't have the whole story. What the victim, the person jumping out of that window, knows is that the building is on fire.
Yeah.
And either choice they have is going to cause them harm or death. They are simply choosing the one they think will hurt the least.
Right.
And we as a society have let that building burn.
Yeah.
And the person, so this person on the top level shook their hands. They said, well, I guess we know where you stand. And I said, well, sir, I thought that was the point of my testimony, which apparently is a faux pas.
Mm-hmm.
But afterward, I had somebody come up to me afterward, somebody who works in a tall building, downtown, federal building, and put their hand on me. And they said, you know what? Maybe, honey, what you should do is there's a woman down at the park, and when the kids play football, she just goes and cheers for them. And that's very supportive. And maybe that's what you ought to do, because you will Ooh. Never begin talking about demand here in Georgia.
Oh, my gosh.
They were patronizing you. He or she was patronizing.
Ask my husband how well that goes over.
Yeah.
I'm going to let him plead the fifth on that
one.
So I think for me, it was a turning point moment, because this was such hard work. And I was getting all these people saying, well, nobody cares and nobody talks about it. And it was like, you know what? But I do. I'm going to just show up again tomorrow. And that's what we've done. We've shown up every single day.
Good for you.
Good for you.
We're
good,
not
good.
Putting up with it. And we're giving people things that they can do to be part of the change. And they're all listed on our website. And there's something you can do. Men, sign the pledge. Become part of the solution. Become 1 in 7,200 against. We have Feeding Vulnerable Children programs. Empower yourself. Schedule a training at your church, at your organization, at your business. You know, train your people. Businesses, put something in your human resources guide that says no company money or time will be spent at anything associated with adult entertainment, and that it's a dismissible offense if you do. Put some teeth in some things and tell people you're not going to put up with it anymore.
Cheryl, let me ask you, this is Legacy Leader Radio. What is the legacy you want to leave behind?
I want the next generation of young men to understand true masculinity, and that doesn't mean scoring something.
Okay.
I want the next generation of children to be protected, and I want this generation of adults to begin it.
That's fantastic.
Got chill bumps.
That's great. Cheryl, always asked my guests this question on every show. If I was to ask you what your theme song would be, if Cheryl's going to ready to walk into a room and they ask me, they said, "I want you to, we're going to play Cheryl's song." Cheryl, talk to me, honey. What's that song? What would
Bob
it be?
Dylan. Everybody that serves somebody.
Oh,
wow, she was ready for that one.
Have you been listening to my shows?
She has her own soundtrack
for many years. It's like, you got to serve somebody.
I was just hoping you weren't going to say it's a hard day to be a pimp or whatever.
No, I think that for me, that is kind of, you know, you got to serve somebody. Everybody's going to serve somebody. Choose who you serve and believe in it and do it well.
It's totally,
a good song choice.
That is. It's an excellent choice, and I absolutely just love that. And I want you to tell me how I can serve you and help you in your cause.
Please promote our website. You know, I mean, or And I'll come back again. I know I gab a lot, but I'll come back again. I mean, I think, but I think that would be it, is to, for you, even if you yourselves, if one of the asks today and every so often would be, I'm going to commit to tell 5 more people about this. And I'm going to ask those 5 to tell 5 more about it, to learn something about this, because that's the way this is going to change. And so that would be the big thing. If I could ask you today, is if you could ask everybody and you know, see if you can figure out how to keep track of that. Everybody commit to telling 5 more people something you heard today.
Yeah.
Just well, tell them.
Cheryl, we're getting ready to wrap up here. Before we leave here, I'd like to also let you know that I personally, and I think I speak for the people in the room here, that we support your cause. I support your cause wholeheartedly,
absolutely,
and I will give you my love and support behind that. And I would also like to ask you, if you haven't already received it, you should be getting one in the mail or an email. The latest issue of Speaker Magazine, which I'm featured in there.
And
my topic of discussion is actually on about anger management and how we men show up, and also women, and how we can our own personal issues, paradigms, beliefs can get in the way of us being the best and brightest of who we're meant to be in this world. So I would like to let you know you have my love and support on your cause. You were recommended to me by Pastor Keith Moore at Dogwood Church.
Oh,
and,
wonderful.
And so let me know offline and after the show if any way we can support and help your cause, and to help these young boys and young girls off, get them off the street, get them to a healthier life so they can be great, great, more productive and thriving members of our society. Cheryl, I'd like to say thank you very much for being a great, great, engaging and thought-provoking guest on the show today. Mike, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, it's just an excellent show.
Okay, and Krista?
Do we want to share your website address?
Yeah,
please.
Go ahead, please.
www.streetgrace.org, and we can find you on Facebook as well, facebook.com/streetgrace. And if people want to connect with Cheryl directly, we can find you on LinkedIn, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Cheryl DeLuca Johnson.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a fantastic show. Thank you all. Tweet, let us know, get the word out there. Legacy Leader Radio, we love you all. Have a great day. Hi, Mom.